Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. I'm Tony Ness, VPA. Brian Littleton, VPA's Radiation Protection Division, is going to give us a presentation on the Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, ANPR for short, for EPA's Environmental Protection Standards for Nuclear Power Operations. Brian will discuss why we're asking if groundwater protection provisions should be added to this regulation. Now, EPA is not proposing any changes to the standards at this time. We've issued this ANPR to solicit public input and information early as we evaluate whether the standards need to be changed. We're giving this presentation to provide information to help you submit comments. This webinar itself is not a means of submitting comments. Comments on the ANPR must be submitted in writing, and those are due June 4th. We have a lot of people on the line today, so we're going to keep the phones on mute so that everyone can hear the presentation without distractions. Brian and other EPA staff members will answer questions at the end of the presentation. We'll take your questions in writing. For those of you participating in the webinar website, please enter your questions into the chat room at the bottom of the page. For those of you participating by telephone only, please email your questions to me at nesky.tony@epa.gov. That's nesky.tony@epa.gov. And even though we'll be answering your questions at the end of the presentation, feel free to email me or enter them in the chat room throughout the webinar. And feel free to enjoy the chat room. We only ask that any remarks or questions entered into it be pertinent to the specific environmental regulations that we're discussing now, and that they be courteous. We will not allow any entries that are threatening or defamatory or that endorse particular services or products. So with that, let me turn it over to Brian.
Thank you, Tony. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This webinar is being held as part of the public comment period for the Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking for revising the Environmental Radiation Protection Standards for Nuclear Power Operations. The standards have been published in the Code of Federal Regulations under 40 CFR Part 190 and are sometimes referred to as 40 CFR 190. My name is Brian Littleton. I'm the project lead in the EPA's Radiation Protection Division, which is under the EPA's Office of Air and Radiation. The ANPR was published in the Federal Register on February 4th of this year, and the public comment period for this ANPR will be open until June 4th of 2014. In this webinar, we're discussing issues related to protecting water resources around nuclear power operations facilities. We're not here today to take comments. Formal comments must be submitted in writing. We're here today to help you prepare your comments by discussing some of the issues regarding protecting water resources around nuclear power operations facilities, and to give you a chance to hear each other's thoughts and questions. Now I'll go on to the next slide, which is slide number 4. Presentation outline. This presentation will cover some background issues regarding water contamination in the development of the existing standards. Then we will talk about some of the rationale and assumptions which formed the basis of how the agency had addressed water resources in the existing standard. We will discuss what has changed regarding water protection at nuclear power operations facilities, including summarizing what we know about radiation contamination from uranium fuel cycle facilities and recent changes in standards and practices. Then we will restate the questions that the agency is seeking input on. We'll follow that with a summary of the issue, and finally a discussion of the issue will follow. Now let's get started with the presentation. If you'll turn to slide number 5, let's recap the requirements of 40 CFR 190. 40 CFR 190 contains two main radiation protection provisions. First, there are public dose limits established under 40 CFR 190.10A that state that no individual of the public shall receive a radiation dose in excess of 25 millirems per year to the whole body, 75 millirems per year to the thyroid, and 25 millirems per year to any other organ. To be clear, these limits are for members of the public and are not applied to radiation workers who are subject to different standards specific to radiation workers. These limits were based on recommendations established in the International Committee on Radiation Protection Report Number 2, which was published in 1959. Since that time, our understanding of radiation and its effects on our bodies have improved. The other major provision is that there are radionuclide release limits established under 40 CFR 190.10B that set annual limits on the total quantities of radioactivity entering the environment for certain radionuclides per gigawatt of electricity produced. These limits are 50,000 curies of krypton 85 per gigawatt of electricity produced in any given year, 5 millicuries of iodine 129 per gigawatt of electricity produced in any given year, and 0.5 or half a millicurie of combined plutonium 239 and other alpha emitters with half-lives exceeding 1 year, again, per gigawatt of electricity produced in any given year. The issue to note with the existing standards is that there are no surface water or groundwater protection provisions included as part of this standard. No separate surface water or groundwater protection provisions included as part of this standard. Instead, they rely upon limits placed on either effluent radionuclide limits or individual dose protection limits to restrict what is released into the water. Now let's move on to slide number 6. In developing specific standards for the uranium fuel cycle, the agency has stated its rationale. The final environmental statement cites the rationale for not including water-specific standards as, and this is a quote, the liquid pathway releases from these facilities, and they were speaking about the uranium fuel cycle facilities, result in much smaller potential doses than do noble gas releases or air releases. Detailed studies of several specific facilities have revealed no actual dose to any individual from this pathway as great as 1 millirem per year, end quote. Let's move on to slide number 7. This next slide discusses radionuclide contamination of the water at or around nuclear power operations facilities. Groundwater contamination has been found at several of the nuclear power plants. The primary radionuclide responsible for groundwater contamination at power plants is tritium. Tritium levels as high as 3.2 million picocuries per liter have been reported to the NRC in the groundwater at some nuclear power plant facilities. These elevated levels of tritium in groundwaters at these plants have prompted the NRC to create two specialized task forces to examine the issue. These task forces are the Liquid Radionuclide Release Lessons Learned Task Force that was created in 2006 and the Groundwater Task Force that was created in 2010. The task forces did not identify any instances where the public's health was impacted, but did nonetheless recommend modifications to a number of regulatory documents. In addition to nuclear power plants, groundwater contamination has been found at other fuel cycle facilities in the form of uranium, technetium, strontium, or cesium. If we consider surface water contamination, surface water discharges of cooling water with minor amounts of radionuclide contaminants are routinely released, generally to the rivers or the lakes at these nuclear power plants. The EPA's Clean Water Act, the National Pollutant Discharge and Elimination System permits all industrial surface water discharges with its program. And these programs are generally implemented by the states. Okay, if we go to slide number 8. Existing standards and practices. There are several standards and practices which already exist that promote the elimination or minimization of radiation releases to surface or groundwaters. The NRC currently has regulations which limit releases to the water. General Design Criteria 60 promotes controlling suitably the release of radioactive contaminants into the environment. However, this is not a numeric limit. The NRC also has regulations in 10 CFR Part 50, Appendix I, which provide numerical guidance that limit releases of radionuclide material to as low as reasonably achievable. Lastly, the NRC also oversees the uranium fuel cycle facility's compliance with our EPA's requirements under 40 CFR Part 190, which are multimedia limits that include water discharges. In addition to these standards, the industry has recognized the need to proactively reduce any water discharges. The industry, through the Nuclear Energy Institute, has developed a voluntary groundwater initiative that includes best practices to reduce groundwater contamination at nuclear facilities. Also, nuclear insurers, both the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations and the American Nuclear Insurers, have begun to stress the importance of having no groundwater contamination and have noted facilities that do have groundwater contamination. This results in higher insurance rates, which directly influences plant management to eliminate and reduce these releases. The message that the industry is sending out is that any radiation release is bad for business. While these industry practices are positive, they lack the strength of legal regulation. Okay, if we move on to slide number 9, issues for public comment. The agency has concluded that it is appropriate to revisit the initial question of water protection at nuclear power operations facilities. We are seeking input on the following aspects of this issue. If a groundwater protection standard is established in the general environment outside the boundaries of nuclear fuel cycle facilities, what should the basis be and how should it be implemented? As a subset of that, does the state have an appropriate role in implementing any potential water protection standards? Also, are additional standards aimed at limiting surface water contamination needed? And then finally, the agency would also be interested in receiving any available data on what costs may be incurred with the implementation of any new groundwater protection standard. We move to the summary slide. In summary, this water protection webinar, the agency will be considering whether there is a need to develop a separate groundwater protection standard in its revisions to its environmental radiation protection requirements to nuclear power operations, 40 CFR Part 190. We will also accept comments on policy issues associated with water protection at these facilities. Okay, this concludes the presentation aspect of this webinar. I'd like to summarize or finish this off by stating ways that the agency is collecting public comment on these issues. Statements submitted during this webinar are not considered as official comments. Comments can be submitted by going to www.regulations.gov and following the directions there for submitting your comments, or by submitting comments via email to a-m-r.docket@epa.gov. Or you can mail your comment to EPA's Docket Center, and include environmental radiation protection standards for nuclear power operations. And lastly, you could hand deliver your comments to EPA's Docket Center, which is located at 1301 Constitution Avenue in Northwest Washington, D.C., during normal work hours. Now we'd like to open up this webinar to questions and comments and answers.
Okay, Brian, well, we see that we've got some people typing in the chat room, and as soon as the questions appear, we will we'll pose them to you. For those of you participating by telephone, you can submit your questions to me at Nesky, N-E-S-K-Y, .Tony, T-O-N-Y, at EPA.gov.
We're just awaiting the questions to come in now.
Okay, Brian, here's our first question. Are radiation standards really enforced by the states in the NPDES permits? Elaborate, please.
The answer is yes, and there's a mixed bag. These states are set by these standards are set, or the release limits are set by each state, and so they're going to differ from state to state. But if there are radiation limits on, whether they be on tritium or any other contaminant, they're going to be set by the states and enforced by the states under the Clean Water Act provisions.
Okay, next question. Does the EPA consider the NEI 07-07 GPI as voluntary compliance by sites?
Yes, that is not anything that the agency actually enforces. We're aware of it, and it is stated as a voluntary industry initiative that's around out there.
Next question. Explain the statement, no legal strength. Doesn't the NRC have the capability to monitor and assess violations?
They do have the capability to monitor and assess violations, but it has to be with their either a law, that a standard that is set by the agency, or a standard that the commission sets. So if there's no specific standard on either groundwater or surface water releases, then there's nothing to enforce.
Okay, and if you'd all bear with us, we see some people are typing in questions. Again, I see them being typed into the chat room. For those of you participating by phone only, you can email me, Nesky, N-E-S-K-Y, .Tony, T-O-N-Y, at EPA.gov. All right, next question. When you report that 25 MR, who is that? Is that the standard man? Is it the average member of a critical group? Does any federal standard factor the most radiologically sensitive portion of the human life cycle, parentheses, juvenile female?
Okay, I believe the question came and referred to the 25 millirem per year either whole body or any other organ, which was part of the dose limits established in 40 CFR 190.10A. And they are, and this question actually is a dose question, but they are, I guess, enforced to a member of the public. And as I'm reading the rest of the question, And regarding does this apply to the most sensitive, I guess, population, we haven't quite determined how to enforce, I guess, our capability of applying, I guess, the dose limits to subpopulations yet. That is a question we're taking input on as part of this advance notice of proposed rulemaking. That's going to be actually part of the next webinar, which is going to talk about risk and dose. So we are taking comment on that and how we should apply that.
And we had a follow-up question regarding that one. Wouldn't it be the maximum of each?
The maximum?
I am going to guess. If you'd like to repeat the question, I think you're referring to the radiologically sensitive portion of the human life cycle. If that's not the right question, please repeat your question.
Yeah, I guess I interpret the question as being, wouldn't, I guess, the limit apply to that subpopulation that would receive the maximum dose from any release? And I would say that, we haven't set how we would enforce any new dose standard, but that's fair game for any comments. And the agency is taking comments on that issue.
Okay. I got an email, Brian. I'm not sure it's a question, but I don't know if you want to comment on it. The email was, you are aware that Appendix B of NEI 07-07 is the NRC environmental inspection criteria. This is also what the sites are inspected against.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much for that comment. It was referring to the voluntary groundwater initiative that the Nuclear Energy Institute has put out there and that put out there for the industry.
Okay, we have another question. Instead of establishing numeric limits at this time, could EPA rely on narrative standards and await the effectiveness of NEI 07-07 and GPI?
Yes, that's something that we're considering. We'll take comment on that. That's one approach.
Okay, we have another question. 1 second, please. Next question. Regarding slide number one, how can the limit for thyroid exposure be higher than the whole body limit? Before I reached the thyroid limit, I would have exceeded the whole body limit. I'm not sure if it's funny.
Well, those limits were organ-specific limits, and it's a different calculational methodology for that. The thyroid calculates how much, I guess, dose has been received by the thyroid specifically, versus the whole body or any other organ limit would be directed at the other organs. And so there's a different way to calculate that. So it's possible to have the thyroid dose exceeded without the whole body dose being exceeded.
Okay, a question from email. Per the previous comment, is it true that the NRC monitors the industry with regard to compliance with the NEI 07-07 initiative?
I can't answer that question. That question is actually probably more appropriately answered by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I don't think I can properly answer that.
Okay, we got some other questions in the chat room here. 1. Did you want to provide the docket number, docket EPAHQ OAR-2013-0689 at the regulation.gov site, to make it clearer than stating than going to regulations.gov and following directions? For example, if you put the docket number EPA headquarters AOR 2013, pardon me, people, my screen is misbehaving. In the search box and click on search, you will get the relevant place. I can answer this. I'll post a message with our website, and our website has a link right to where you can submit comments. And I believe our emails that sent out to you if you click on the link, it'll take you to the exact place where you need to enter your comments. Thank you.
And the commenter is correct. That I think the commenter cited the proper docket number, which would actually comment specifically on this rule, which I didn't mention. I apologize for that.
Okay. Next question. Please expand the EPA's concept of costs, slide 9. How broad is it? What kind of costs? What is the specific regulatory language that governs a cost analysis?
There's a requirement that all regulations that are, finalized undergo some sort of cost analysis, and there are guidelines for that. I'm not an economist, but there are guidelines that the agency has to publish in order to do an analysis to determine what are the impacts, economic impacts, for any change or any regulation that we put out. I don't have that information directly, but that is part of an analysis, and it's part of what goes into what the agency considers when we consider what provisions and the extent of any changes that we may want to consider when we go about proposing changes.
Okay. Next question. Does the EPA consider 10 CFR 20.1406 acceptable to ensure no legacy sites are created and require a facility to do active monitoring and assessment during the operational phase? If not, what does the agency believe is missing?
Okay. The commenter is referring to NRC requirement and talking about, the capability of their requirements for being an acceptable cleanup standard. I guess that falls a little bit outside of what this requirement is. This is for normal plant operations of nuclear power plant facilities. That question also, I would point out that that question also refers to a memorandum of understanding that our Superfund office, who does have the authority to manage, cleanup of certain facilities, has with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And that's available on, our OSWER website, as well as I believe the NRC probably has on their website as well. So I would refer the commenter to that. But again, the effectiveness or what we consider is acceptable is not part of this action for 40 CFR Part 190.
Okay, next question. 10 CFR 20 includes regulations for adequate radiation surveys and monitoring. Under these regulatory provisions, would not groundwater monitoring be included? And as another regulatory basis, does not the NRC's branch technical position for acceptable radiological Let me repeat the whole question. 10 CFR 20 includes regulations for adequate radiation surveys and monitoring. Under these regulatory provisions, would not groundwater monitoring be included? And as another regulatory basis, does not the NRC's branch technical position for acceptable radiological environmental programs, which includes reporting level concentrations for various radionuclides, such as tritium in drinking water, be considered as additional regulatory rigor that applies to groundwater monitoring?
I mean, I would consider it additional. I mean, I think the question, again, is we here at the agency cannot answer questions regarding what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's programs. I think they're more appropriately directed to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We have seen both the branch technical position, and we're aware of it. But I guess as far as the adequacy of their program, I mean, that's not something that we should really be commenting on.
Next question. Relative to monitoring discharged cooling water, what is the standard method for this monitoring, and is it continuous, required, or voluntary? Is there required reporting to EPA / NRC or both? Does EPA work with NRC to ensure monitoring is effective and diligent?
Okay, well, again, what they're talking about here is releases into surface water. And the releases into surface water, if there are limits that are established under our Office of Water and under the Clean Water Act and the National Pollutant Discharge and Elimination System. Now, that program is almost always implemented by the states, but again, almost always. And because it's a state program, generally speaking, there are different, I guess, levels of, I guess, specificity in each of these permits. So they're going to vary across the board, and so we really don't have that type of specific information. I can't even make a general statement, with the exception that we know that there are limits on some of the plants' releases, limits on some of the radiation released from the plants by some of the states, and it's under these programs. If you're concerned about whether a specific plant in your location has limits on any of the radiation releases into the surface water, the best thing to do is contact your state.
Okay, follow-on question on that. I'm referring to Massachusetts and the expired permit by EPA.
Okay. Again, I'm not familiar with that permit requirement. I would have to go look at that specific permit requirement. And for what facility, I'm not sure if it's what plan it's referring to, but I don't have that information right at hand. The best person to ask for answer that is probably the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, the he was referring to the Pilgrim plant.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the best people to answer that question are probably going to be the state of Massachusetts or our EPA regional office at EPA Region 1.
Okay, we got a comment in by email. The NRC monitors the nuclear power plants in the United States for compliance to the NEI 07-07. As previously stated, the initiative appendix is part of the environmental inspection criteria used by the regions for inspections.
Okay, that sounds like a comment. Okay, thank you.
We're awaiting a few more questions here. And while we wait for the questions to pop up, I'm going to give you the exact link where you can submit questions to regulations.gov. And for those of you participating by telephone, the link is in the email I sent you. Okay, we have another question. Can you comment on the applicability of the Atomic Energy Act in preempting states from regulating radioactive components and NPDES permits?
What we're talking about there are two separate mandates, the Atomic Energy Act, which is the statute that governs our requirements under 40 CFR 190. Versus the Clean Water Act, which is a separate mandate that the agency has, which governs, I guess, releases into surface water discharges under the Clean Water Act and the NPDES program set up under that. The two are, you know, there's really, they're two separate mandates, and they each have their applicability and different requirements that are set up under them. They're two different things.
All right, we got another question, and that is, how does EPA 40 CFR 190 relate to environmental justice, specifically Executive Order 12898?
There is an environmental justice component for all of our regulations. The agency requires that we look at environmental justice concerns and that it be evaluated for any proposal and final rules. We have not done that as of yet. That environmental justice requirement came out after 40 CFR 190 was originally published, but it would be part of any review and assessment for any changes that we make to 40 CFR 190.
Okay, another question, Brian. What mandates and compliance mechanisms effectively evaluate discharges into waterways that cross state boundaries, e.g. rivers and oceans?
I guess, that's one of the questions I think that we'll have to do a little bit of follow-up work on. The reason is because we're talking about the different offices program that I'm just not that familiar with the specifics about that. So we'll have to get back to folks, probably follow up when we publish a summary at the end of the comment period of all the webinars. I'm going to try to catch and capture all these questions that have come up that are things that I couldn't answer. I'll try to capture them, and if we have a response, put that included at that time. Thank you very much for the question, though.
Okay, we have another one. Can you please explain the relationship between the NPDES permits and EPA's authority with respect to permitting radioactive releases? Is the ANPR considering making changes with respect to routine surface water discharges or only interested in potential impacts from groundwater?
Okay, there's a lot there. Again, this regulation, the 40 CFR Part 190, is our mandate is the Atomic Energy Act, which does allow us to set limits if we find it necessary on groundwater discharges only for radionuclide or Atomic Energy Act regulated materials. The NPDES regulations apply for water discharges from industrial facilities. And it's a different mandate. So, again, we're talking apples and oranges, but they have a different mandate that they meet, and they have set up, I guess, certain releases. They have the capability of having limits on certain releases for radionuclides. That's really the only real cross-section that's there. Anything that we do would be under the Atomic Energy Act because that's our authority here.
Okay. I see that the typing has slowed down in the chat room. I don't see any other questions in the queue. If you have any, please enter them now. If you're participating by phone only, please email them to me at Nesky, N-E-S-K-Y, Tony, T-O-N-Y, at EPA.gov. And I don't see anybody typing quite yet. Are we all finished with questions?
And we'd be interested if anyone from the public has any comments that they'd like to make available. We could repeat them and let the rest of the listeners know what those comments are as well.
Sure. So if you here we go. We got some typing going. We have a few more questions coming. Again, to repeat, comments, official comments have to be submitted in writing, and those are due June 4th. And I see we've got some questions in the queue. We're waiting for them to appear. I guess this is a time when Muzak might be useful, but we're, again, we're waiting for a few more questions. Okay, we've got a comment. Life cycle is what we must protect. A juvenile female is not a, quote, subpopulation, unquote. It is an unavoidable portion of the human life cycle.
Thank you for that comment.
We also got a suggestion to use the Jeopardy theme music. If it weren't copyrighted, I would do it. We still have some questions coming up. Bear with us, please. Here we go. Next question. Can you expand on state authority? I was previously under the impression that states cannot limit radioactive effluents from nuclear power plants. Was I just plain wrong?
This question actually refers to the capabilities of the authorities vested by the Clean Water Act to the states, to our delegated states. And I guess what their capabilities are. They do have the capabilities, the states do have the capabilities to set limits there's a term that's part of their program. They do have that capability. Again, that program is not something that the radiation office actually implements, so I'm not as familiar with the details of that. You'd have to talk with somebody, talk with either the state or somebody at the Office of Water on the details of what gives them their authority for regulating, I guess, certain radionuclides within their program.
And we're waiting for some more questions. They're in the queue. Okay. Next question. In dealing with Pilgrim, we are concerned that there is no real practical oversight, either by NRC or EPA, relative to ongoing rad releases to groundwater into the bay and into the bay directly. Pardon me. And this will be exacerbated by low-level rad storage at the bay and long-term storage adjacent to the bay. How do we get more efficient oversight? EPA's current NPDES permit expired 18 years ago, and leaks are increasing. We are working with the local office, but in the meantime, there are ongoing impacts, and oversight appears to be lacking. Will this effort fill the void?
That's a good comment, and thank you for that comment. It's always good to hear about what's happening out there specifically around some of these plants. I would say that maybe what we need to think about is there a way to put a system in place that may be a little bit a better solution for, I guess, regulating any potential, whether it be a groundwater or surface water releases in place if it's needed. Again, it gets back at the crux of our question. You know, do we need separate groundwater or surface water limits as part of 40 CFR 190, and what types of provisions does the public think are realistic?
We got a comment in response to some previous discussion. The Atomic Energy Act preempts states from regulating radioactivity in NPDES permits, says the commenter.
That's the Atomic Energy Act. But the NPDES program is set up under the Clean Water Act. So, again, it's not the Atomic Energy Act authority that sets that, but it's what the requirements that fall out under the Clean Water Act.
Okay, we got a question by email. Don't the EPA drinking water standards apply to Don't the EPA drinking water standards apply to reactors and nuclear fuel cycle facilities? Are you considering allowing higher levels of effluent release because no one drinks directly from the outflow?
Well, the question, I guess, talks about who is regulated by the drinking water MCLs. And the drinking water MCLs are implemented at the tap. So although that, you know, if they're leaked into a groundwater source, then you could assume that they're regulated at that point. But they actually don't apply to the specific, you know, to a nuclear power plant facility specifically. They apply to groundwater that is used as drinking water, as a drinking water source.
Okay. We got a comment. As a member of the public, it appears that the nuclear industry has done an excellent job of reducing radioactive effluents and maintaining exposures below 10 CFR 50 Appendix I. Why is the government spending time and money to fix something that does not appear to be broken or further regulation?
Okay, that's a good comment. If that's the way that the commenter feels, they can submit that in writing, and that's kind of what we're getting at. You know, is there a need for additional regulation on this, or does the public think that the provisions that are out there adequately, I guess, protect the public from contamination, both via groundwater or surface water.
Okay. We got a question from email. Doesn't 10 CFR 20 regulate the concentration of radioactive materials in the discharges? NPDES generally has not been associated with these discharges as they are governed by federal regulations as enforced by NRC. I am confused as to why the speaker appears to disregard the limits in 10 CFR 20 and imply that there are no federal limits currently in place.
It's not a disregarding of the limits of 10 CFR 20. Generally, I kind of back off from speaking about, I guess, programs that are not the agency's programs or specifically not programs that I can properly represent. I can't really properly represent nuclear regulatory, limit and program. So I kind of back off of that and kind of refer you to the proper agency there. But we are aware they're out there, we do know that there is an impact and there is a cross-link between anything that we could propose. And that's kind of generally why, we're asking the question. You know, are the programs that are out there adequate or should there be something more specific to protect the public from either groundwater releases or surface water releases?
Okay, we still have some questions here. We have a comment. 10 CFR 50 is monitored pathways. Groundwater is a new issue that has become more prevalent these days and is unmonitored.
Okay, that's a comment, and 10 CFR 50, again, refers to a requirement that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has developed.
All right. Another question. Is the EPA familiar with those NEI initiatives governing the underground pipe and tank integrity programs at nuclear power plants and which are coordinated with the groundwater monitoring programs? These programs reflect the, quote, beyond regulatory, unquote, initiatives designed to eliminate, minimize inadvertent releases of radioactive materials that may potentially communicate with groundwater.
Yes, we are, We do have knowledge of these programs under the Groundwater Initiative, the Voluntary Groundwater Initiative. That's why we bring them up. We know that this is happening in industry, and we know that there are other initiatives that industry is moving on. But again, an initiative does not necessarily make a regulation and a requirement.
Okay, we got a question from email. Could you explain the relationship between 10 CFR Part 50, Appendix I, and effluent limits calculated to ensure compliance with 40 CFR Part 190?
Well, again, I guess you're kind of asked, you know, the limits that we have or that we don't have specifically are dose limits. We have dose limits that are enforced by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We also have effluent limits that are enforced by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. 10 CFR, what was that? Was it 20 or 50 that I commented?
I'm sorry. One second. It was 10 CFR, 10 CFR 50, 50 and 40 CFR 190.
Yeah. Again, that's a nuclear regulatory requirement that must be met. And it's a separate requirement, and it's actually a little bit more stringent than our release limits that we have established under 40 CFR Part 190. I guess that's kind of an answer to that, but they're not really comparable.
Okay, we've got a related question by email. Are the NRC limits more conservative than 10 CFR 190? I thought it was stated that the EPA established the regulations and the NRC enforced them. Is there a disconnect between these two agencies? And as a first move, shouldn't the EPA and NRC talk to each other and find out who is doing what?
Can you read each question?
Sure.
Individually?
Sure. I'm sorry. Going a little fast here. First question of this multiple question, are the NRC limits more conservative than 10 CFR 190?
In some instances, yes, actually probably in most instances, there may be a scenario out there where, you know, if it's a very short distance to the fence line, that maybe the 40 CFR 190 requirements are maybe a little bit more stringent, but I don't think that that's actually occurring out there in industry. But again, there are two different types of requirements. Our requirements are to protect the public, and actually they depend a lot upon the distance from the release to the fence line and how much, I guess, the person of the public will take in. So they're not really directly comparable.
Okay. The rest of the question was, I thought it was stated that EPA established the regulations and NRC enforced them. Is there a disconnect between these two agencies?
Okay. Yes, EPA establishes our regulations. In addition, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission can publish more stringent regulations or publish their own set of regulations. And that's what's been done in this particular case. Now, over time, it's just so happened that we have a couple different layers of regulations, but the Nuclear Regulatory Commission enforces both the EPA's regulations, as the Atomic Energy Act had envisioned, as well as their own regulations for nuclear power plants and other nuclear facilities.
And the last part of the question was, shouldn't the EPA and NRC talk to each other and find out who is doing what?
The EPA and the NRC do talk to each other. Again, if we have a regulation, they are the implementers for our regulation under the Atomic Energy Act. So we do talk quite frequently on these issues, but we certainly don't, just because the EPA has a regulation that applies to certain facilities, that does not prevent the Nuclear Regulatory Commission from developing a secondary set or of regulations that apply to the same facilities that are more stringent and are based upon their understanding of whether it be nuclear power plant or radioactive activities at that facility.
All right, and we had a comment entered into the chat room just to let everybody know what's going on if you're participating by phone. It was regarding groundwater. The comment is, the release of radionuclides into groundwater has become an increasing issue in the past decades after the original regs were developed. That was just a comment, and we have another question. Could you ask the presenter what relevance NSP Company versus State of Minnesota, 1971, has to this discussion? Or actually to the commenter, not to to the presenter. So if somebody made a comment like that, please enter it into the chat room. Next question. Is there an MOU for the Clean Water Act similar to the MOU for the Clean Air Act, NESHAP?
There very well may be. I'll have to follow up and get back on that question. I need to check with our Office of Water to determine what they have in place.
And for those of you on the phone, we did get a reply in the chat room to that question. If I'm interpreting this correctly, the relevance of NSP Company versus the State of Minnesota, the commenter replied, it applies to the preemption issue. I don't see any more questions in the queue, and we've been here about an hour, so let me just double-check my email. And I see no further questions. Oh, one person typing. One second, please. a compliment. Thank you. We got... Well done. Thank you. Thank you for participating, everybody. And with that, we've got one more question. Another thank you. Well, we'll take you the thank yous. And again, we appreciate your taking the time to participate. And again, we look forward to your formal comments due June 4th.
That's correct. Thank you very much, everybody, for participating.
Thank you all, and goodbye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 2 minutes. The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.